Hi, everyone, and welcome to another Roofing Contractor Walls and Ceilings Legal Insights. I'm RC editor Art Eisner, and I appreciate you being here, whether it's by video or by podcast. Joining me, as usual, is Trent Cotney of Adams & Reese. Trent, as always, I'm glad you're here to walk us through some of the big legal issues and otherwise affecting the industry. How you doing?
Doing great, Art. It's good to see you.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. Well, much of the country is trying to get to spring, right? but if it wouldn't be spring really if we weren't talking about preparing for OSHA. The feds recently made some news on roofingcontractor.com with their asbestos ruling in relation to the Toxic Substances Control Act. That's a lot to get out. Trent, what's the significance for roofers on that?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things that we're seeing with EPA is a lot of this rulemaking as it relates to, you know, hazardous chemicals and toxic substances. And among that is asbestos. In particular, they were focusing on the crystalline type asbestos that is still being placed in products primarily overseas and being shipped here for construction purposes. What's interesting in this rulemaking that they're doing, though, is what happens to asbestos that is otherwise rendered inert or is naturally occurring. I mean, it's a naturally occurring mineral, and you're going to get trace amounts in a variety of different products, you know, usually silica type based products. So, you know, how this is ultimately going to play out and to what extent they're going to be really putting pen to paper on the amount of asbestos that can be present naturally occurring is going to be interesting. One of the other things that I thought is probably worth mentioning is that several manufacturers, at least ones overseas, had figured out ways to use asbestos without having the, you know, toxic or hazardous side effects. But this rule appears to prohibit that as well. So again, you know, more remains to be seen, but yes, you can absolutely anticipate that there will be additional regulation and enforcement as it relates to asbestos containing construction materials.
All right. So I was going to ask if this will make anything harder for the construction industry. I guess so. In that sense, as long as it's going to be enforced that way, but it does sound like from what you just said, there may be some catching up that the EPA maybe need to do on this?
Yeah, you know, it obviously asbestos is incredibly hazardous, dangerous material, but from a construction standpoint, amazing. Like it there's a reason it was used everywhere in the, you know, 20s through the 60s. You know, it is absolutely an incredible construction material. So if it could be rendered inert, then I do see where, you know, maybe a caveat or an exception could be done to the EPA. What's interesting that we see a lot is EPA regulations being disseminated down to local state agencies. Mm. And where a lot of contractors, especially roofing contractors and, you know, walls and ceilings type contractors have gotten in trouble is with disposal of asbestos related materials. So we see a lot of enforcement on a local state level where the testing hasn't occurred and it's just being dumped in a regular site. And oftentimes we get dragged in to defend contractors against those agencies when that happens.
I see. So it's being enforced at that local level, which I guess makes sense. But doesn't that make it more difficult, though, for contractors also operating within those parameters, like, you know, if there isn't one regulation to kind of follow?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can be, you know, a great example is, you know, you can be in Pinellas County, which is, you know, St. Petersburg, Florida. They have a very robust and active investigation unit that looks for asbestos disposal. And then you can go right next door to Hillsborough County where they've got it, but they're not as active, right? And I think it varies state by state. You can go to a place like Montana where there probably is very little regulation. You go to a place like California, you know, you're going to have a lot when it comes to that kind of stuff. So yes, it does trickle down to a certain extent. What's interesting is I think this adds some additional layers that ultimately contractors are going to have to deal with.
All right. Two other thoughts on this. You know, one of the things that struck me when I saw the headline was that, you know, hadn't this been done already, you know, being that it was 2022, thought, you know, the stance on asbestos was, has been pretty firm for decades. And also this did make, this was the first rule implemented under that Toxic Controlled Substance Act that I mentioned, which was enacted in 2016. Does it usually take that long for you know, a first rule like this to happen? And should it take that long?
Yeah, well, we're talking about the government here. So, you know, nothing moves fast, and for better or worse, sometimes that's a good thing. But I do think that you're going to see more out of this act. I think it's going to start to be used. I mean, asbestos is sort of a gimme. So they're probably testing the waters with that as far as getting the regulations in place to enforce it. Some of it is rewriting, you know, who has responsibility for what, and that was the purpose of the act originally. So, you know, long-term, I do think that you're going to see more and more substances added to this act for purposes of regulation.
Okay. Well, you know, that being said about things moving or churning slow, when it comes to government and regulation, one thing that's not going slow is really this emphasis on heat and safety regulations. You know, OSHA announced late last year they were going to change how they enforced the heat illness and injury standard. And now they've launched a full initiative for the construction industry. What's your take on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been watching this one closely, the heat and injury, the new standard. Keep in mind that OSHA has always cited contractors for heat injury related illness under the general duty clause prior to this. But there was a case that came out, an administrative decision that said that they needed a more specific rule if they wanted to really cite that. So that's what's got them on a tear to get this thing enacted. Obviously, we're paying close attention to it. Something that people want to keep their eye on is in May, beginning of May, there's a stakeholders meeting. That's a good opportunity to get your voice heard. I often travel to DC or appear on the phone to at least get my two cents in about what I think about the standard itself. You know, obviously, we want to keep our workers safe from any kind of heat-related injury or illness. But at the same time, I think we need to factor in the, you know, if you work in certain places like Florida or Texas or New Mexico, Arizona, you know, Southern California, it's hot, right? And just because it's hot doesn't necessarily mean that it's unsafe to work. You have to factor in hydration. You got to factor in, you know, ability to work in that kind of environment. Oftentimes the heat injury and illness citations that we defend are not in hot areas. They're in places like Chicago or the Northeast, where workers aren't used to high heat. You know, a 90 degree day here in Florida is a nice December day for us. You know, up in Chicago, that would be a tough day during the summer. So, you know, you wanna make sure that you gotta add some common sense to this. And I think that's where we as an industry come into play, make sure that our voice is heard at the stakeholder meeting and otherwise.
Right. So other than the stakeholder meeting, is there anything the industry could or should be doing to, you know, slow this down a little bit? Because we're talking about regulations hitting this summer, right?
Right, right. So we submitted a white paper a little bit earlier, several months ago on the issue. And I encourage you, you know, if you got thoughts, submit them. You know, get with your legislative contacts, whether it be in the House or in the Senate. Oftentimes, even though it's an administrative agency, there is some legislative oversight. You know, one of the champions that has worked closely with us has been Senator Marshall out of Kansas. He was very active during Roofing Day, you know, was able to speak to the tile roofing contractors as well as some other people. So he has always been favorable to contractors. I encourage you to get to know these types of people that can be advocates for us up in Washington.
All right, great news there. And as we approach the heat season, trend, as you said, it's always kind of a concern. Are there any new recommendations or anything you want to remind roofers as they start prepping?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing is remember that your safety manual is a living, breathing document, right? This is not something that you create 4 or 5 years ago and never look at it again. You need to constantly update it. And the key thing that OSHA is always looking for is to make sure that you have a culture of safety. What that means is You need ongoing toolbox talks, ongoing safety audits, third-party consultants, all these types of things to show that you are actually trying to get it from the top to the bottom. That's going to be the key thing if for some reason OSHA comes and knocks on your door.
Got it. Okay, what else are you getting calls about?
So later tonight, I'm actually going to be speaking for IBEC Southern California and RCA, the roofing association out there in Southern California. My topic is going to be the latest on materials issues. And as we've talked about in previous discussions, you know, this is just a huge, huge impact on our industry. The one thing that I am spending more time on now, in fact, right before I got on here, was on a 2.5 hour meeting with a surety. These sureties are really turning the screws on contractors at this point. You know, this is not a situation where they sit on the sideline. One of the things that I really recommend to any roofing contractor that has a surety relationship is make sure that you are upfront, that you are actively communicating, that you're doing your best to keep the surety on your side, especially in conferences that occur. With selection of counsel, all those types of things, because this materials issue and the performance bond claims that have come from it have really heightened the sensitivity to sureties out there as it relates to roofing contractors. So very interesting issue. This is, I anticipate it's going to get worse before it gets better. I'm seeing so many pressures out there between, you know, some additional shutdowns in China over COVID, to the war-related issues, to inflation, that you can anticipate that there's going to be more of this type of stuff. So be proactive.
Okay. Yeah. Good warnings to heed there, Trent. All right. Well, I appreciate your insight today and all you're doing for the roofing and construction industries. Where can people find out more?
Sure. Well, they can always hit me up via email at trent.cotney@arlaw.com or go to adamsandreese.com.
All right. And before you check out Trent's website, while you're still on roofingcontractor.com, be sure to sign up for our free e-newsletters and a free e-news magazine so you can stay on top of the latest news and info impacting the industry. For our walls and ceilings audience, please also visit wconline.com and for more comprehensive coverage of the interior construction trade. Stay safe, and we will see you next time.